Clean Simple Eats is a rapidly growing health and wellness company committed to elevating lives through food, fitness, and the best tasting supplements on the planet. The brand takes pride in offering clean, all-natural ingredients with zero artificial flavors and sweeteners. From their TikTok viral protein powders to their delicious super greens mixes and other supplements, every product is non-GMO, third-party tested, and comes in a variety of drool-worthy flavors. Fuel your body and transform your life. Shop Clean Simple Eats supplements.
You're listening to the Utah Checkdown Podcast. And now your hosts, Josh Furlong and Josh Newman.
Welcome back to another edition of the Utah Checkdown Podcast. I am Josh Furlong, joined as always with my co-host Josh Newman. Josh, we're recording, whatever we're doing on a Tuesday, and it's the only one we're going to do this week since Thanksgiving is around the corner. And with that, let's talk Thanksgiving. You did your official rankings on our mailbag today. I have to say, I agree with you on the turkey. I'm not going to say where you put it because, I mean, you can say if you want to, but. Like, I just, personally, I just don't think turkey is worthwhile. So, like, unless you can, like, smoke it or deep fry it, even then I'd much rather have a ham or something else. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I really do appreciate these types of questions for the mailbag. Of course, people are going to ask about rising and football and whatever else, but, like, I really do appreciate, like, the off the beaten path type of stuff, food, holidays, beers, you know, whatever. It's like, you know, we're real people with real interests and we all like food and we all like holidays. Yeah, I just don't, it's not that I don't like turkey. I just like side dishes better.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Thanksgiving turkey is best used for Friday leftover sandwiches, right? You take all your leftovers, right? Turkey, cranberry sauce, stuffing, whatever it is. You put it on some nice thick sourdough bread. And you go to town.
See, I'm not like, even a leftover person, though. So just get rid of
really?
It.
Really?
No, I do not like leftovers.
Oh, you mean like at all or just Thanksgiving?
Most all of it. Like there's a few things that I can eat as leftovers, but I'm a weirdo like that where I just do not like stuff that's sitting in the fridge.
Oh, you're not alone there. I just can't comprehend that personally.
And to me, honestly, it's more like the smell after it's been sitting in the fridge. Like you open up that container or something and it's just like, I don't know. It's just
I mean, Thanksgiving last year, and then I was on a plane to Denver to cover Utah, Colorado on Friday morning.
That's right.
Early Friday morning flight. I remember I opened up my laptop bag, like, on the plane. My wife had, like, made me a leftover sandwich. Was not expecting it. Fell in love all over again. Not embarrassed to say it, okay?
I love that. It's honestly the little simple things, you know? Like, for me, it's my wife. I think she could go along without like really needing food. Like it's not like it's something that like drives her. Where for me, it's like I love food. I love trying new things. I love trying different stuff. So that's funny. I love that. A way to your heart, right? Is
she knows sandwich. She's no dummy.
I love it. I just think that's great. Now this year you can just sit at home and now she can get off scot-free, right? She doesn't have to try as hard.
No, there's no surprise. My in-laws are coming down on Thursday morning. And just Thanksgiving to me, just, you know, one of my favorite childhood holidays. Certainly, you know, memories of, you know, the house smelling like a holiday, right? That was always my thing. Like your home smells like a holiday, whether it be you know, Thanksgiving or, you know, or some of the Jewish holidays are pretty food heavy. So I'm looking forward to my place smelling like Thanksgiving on Thursday.
Yeah, that's always a great smell. So
yeah,
enjoy your Thanksgiving. I know it'll be fun, even if you have turkey or not. And maybe it's a vehicle to gravy. I know some people use that as an excuse.
I don't disagree with that. Like more gravy is always good. Like, but you know, your vehicle is, look, my vehicle could be stuffing, mashed potatoes, roll. I'm not better than like dipping my fork in the gravy and doing that. Like, I just like food, man. I'm on your wavelength. I like food. And like when we're on the road, I like trying things. And yeah, now I'm just, I, damn it, it's like 12:45 and I haven't had lunch yet. And now I'm getting hungry just talking about this.
I learned that food is a very important thing on this beat after yesterday when I said I just went to Waffle House and people lost their mind that I didn't invite them to Waffle House on.
You got people mad yesterday when you brought that up.
Holy cow.
That story real quick.
Yeah, so it's like after the Utah game, I mean, we had kind of chatted like, hey, should we go do dinner? I mean, we don't, as beat members, we were usually, you know, these games end at terrible times. We're mostly going back to our hotel and just kind of riding it out until we have to go home. And since it ended, we were like, well, should we go to dinner? What should we do? A few people were going different places. I think we all kind of chatted and said, okay, well, we'll talk. Well, I had to take a rental car back, and I was right by the Tucson airport, which is basically just right by several food chains, like a McDonald's, Arby's, like that stuff. And I didn't really want to, like, take an Uber or anything like that. But there was a Waffle House across the street. And I like Waffle House, so I don't want to disparage that. Like, but, like, I was thinking, really? Like, I'm in another place, and I want to just go to Waffle House? So I kind of, like, had this attitude of, like, yeah, all I got was a Waffle House. And everybody lost their mind on Monday when I didn't invite them to Waffle House. So lesson learned,
people
if there's Waffle
upset.
House, go. I mean, it's not Buc-ee's. Like, right, if I would have, like, gone to that and said, hey, guys, you want to go to Buc-ee's? Like, is that taboo, too?
Something about Waffle House, I don't know, man. I think part of that is you don't get a lot of Waffle House opportunities where we live in Utah.
Sure.
Look, when we were in Gainesville for the opener last year, like, I'll tell you right now, I saw a Waffle House, I stopped. That was absolutely dinner one night, because you don't get those opportunities often. And when you don't get those opportunities, you have to take advantage when they present themselves, like a Buc-ee's, right? You were in Waco, you hit Buc-ee's. You saw a Waffle House, you don't get that opportunity here. I don't blame you. Look, you're in Tucson, you probably could have found some Mexican, whatever. But in your circumstances, near the airport, rental car, the whole thing, I'll tell you this, I would rather Waffle House than McDonald's or Burger King.
For
because
sure.
At least Waffle House is like you're sitting down to a meal with a waitress. You could like decompress a little bit. I don't fault you for going to Waffle House at all, but I did find it hilarious that everybody got mad.
It's funny, as they were all like freaking out. I was reminded, I don't watch SNL much, but every once in a while one comes, and there was one that they did recently with the Waffle House, like setting it at what's the I'm blanking on her name, the Olivia Ortega, is that the one who played Wednesday?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
she does it on SNL, and it's phenomenal. Like, if you need to go YouTube that, because it perfectly explains what Waffle House is in like it all of its setting. So we'll leave it at that. I'm sorry, I've messed up. And next time I will invite everybody to Waffle House, no matter how far away it is, and we'll break bread over or break waffles, pancakes, eggs, you know. Yeah. Hash browns.
Utah is going to the Big 12. There's going to be Waffle House opportunities in the future.
Can I just say, like, say what you will about the Pac-12 dying, and I'm, you know, we've talked about like not having the easy locales like LA, Seattle, you know, those types of things. But the fact that we get Waffle House, we get Buc-ee's, we get like real barbecue food. I mean, this is great. Like, I'm excited for this. So bring on the Big 10, Big 12. What's wrong with me?
Big Ten's a decade away, okay? Utah's going to need the Big Ten circa 2032, but we're not quite up to that just yet.
Suddenly you've angered some people, so.
Nice job.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's get into this. In the dying Pac-12 that is, let's recap just a tiny bit. Since this is one podcast that we're doing this week, we're not going to hit heavy on everything. And let's be real, you don't really want to talk about that Arizona game, so we'll probably gloss over a lot of that. So we have the Pac-12 rewind, looking back in the last week. There was a few games of interest, obviously being Washington and Oregon State, probably being the top of that. Washington comes away 22-20. It's a close game. Oregon State honestly had a chance to win that. There were several opportunities for them to be in that game. You know, it was a mess, right? Like the rain and snow and everything else there. They're basically playing in a fishbowl. And yet somehow Washington comes away with a win. Did your opinion of Washington change after that game, or do you still kind of see them as kind of where you've had them the whole time?
No. You know, my opinion on Washington has shifted back to, you know, to previously what it was. Washington had kind of been, from, you know, my vantage point, a little wobbly after the Oregon win. Okay. And then, you know, they had to survive Arizona State, you know, with a late pick six. Stanford gave Washington trouble. Utah had them on the ropes for the first half, had chances to win late. And then, you know, the USC game, right? You know, that was defense optional against Washington. That was high scoring. And the whole time I'd kind of been, well, I don't know, man, like Washington, like they're looking shaky. They can't really put teams away, but they're winning. And I think there's something to be said for the way they're winning, and great teams are gonna see some adversity and they're gonna handle that adversity. And Washington has, like, when you looked at the schedule back in August, you looked at that three-game stretch of USC, Utah, and Oregon State, and you weren't really sure if Washington could survive that gauntlet, and it has. And they're 11-0, you know, going for the perfect regular season on Saturday against Washington State in the Apple Cup. No Pac-12 team in the championship game era, which is 2011 until now, has gone 9-0 against a Pac-12 schedule. And Washington is a pretty significant betting favorite to, you know, to beat Washington State and to finish 9-0 in the Pac-12 and to go into the Pac-12 championship game. You know, they have clinched their spot, so they will be going to Vegas. They have an opportunity to do something that, you know, that no Pac-12 team before it has done. And a lot of credit to Kalen DeBoer. You know, if Washington wins on Saturday, you probably can't deny Kalen DeBoer Pac-12 Coach of the Year honors. Although I think Jed Fish at Arizona has a very strong case, but very tough to deny Kalen DeBoer that honor. And, you know, look, we're sitting here recording this Tuesday afternoon. The next college football playoff rankings come out later tonight. You look at the landscape, Washington probably has no worse than the number two resume in all of college football, given who they've beaten. But they've kind of been stuck at number five here for a while in the previous ranking reveal shows. So I'm curious to see what the committee does with Washington now that they've beaten Oregon State and they've beaten a Utah team that was ranked at the time and USC was ranked and they've beaten Oregon. Washington is for real. And for whatever, you know, perception or notion about them being wobbly, that was probably overblown, because the bottom line is they've won games and they've continued to win and they've put themselves in position to do, you know, something, you know, quite epic here as the Pac-12 continues dying, quite frankly.
Well, and the thing that has impressed me the most, and, you know, looking at my ballot, as I've talked about many times on this, my AP ballot, I've talked about how I've put Oregon above Washington for the last few weeks because I think that they are the most complete team. I still see them on pretty equal planes, but I still think that Oregon is probably the most complete team. But what you're seeing with Washington right now is they are, I guess I should say, their defense has stepped up against these tough teams, right? That they haven't been the best defense, and I still don't think that they have probably a championship caliber defense to keep them in those games. I think that's going to be where they would be tested the most. But I think you're seeing them stepping up when they need to the most. Michael Penix Jr. is making the plays. You've got guys on defense that are stepping up and making plays. They obviously have Roma Dunze, who is a phenomenal athlete. They've got guys that can do it. But I think, to me, it was the defense and the fact that they continue to do this against tough teams. You know, whether you win by 1 point or 50 points, like it at all doesn't change the fact that Washington is undefeated, right? Like, I think the fact that they're there, that changed kind of my metric on what their resume looks like, what the team they are. For me, I put them at three. I contemplated them at two. I jumped Oregon, obviously. I jumped them past Michigan as well. Michigan, they still don't have the resume. You look, and I know a lot of people want to say that Michigan is this phenomenal team, and they look it. But I think right now, resume has to matter until, you know, Michigan and Ohio State play this weekend.
I was going to say, they'll have their opportunity to show it.
And that's, and to be honest, like, I was kind of hesitant with Ohio State at number two as well. But I think their resume is fine. They've shown enough. They've been consistent. They've obviously got one of the best wide receivers in the league as well. That doesn't really matter. Ultimately, we're talking about the Pac-12. I still see Washington, you know, as being shaky. I don't mean that they, you know, are a bad team by any means, but I'm still curious to see if we get the expected Pac-12 championship game that, you know, we all expect, a Washington rematch with Oregon. I wouldn't be at all surprised if Oregon wins that. I think Bo Nix is playing at a phenomenal rate right now. Oregon, I mean, he had 6 touchdowns against Arizona State, and you can say what you will about Arizona State. Utah, obviously, ran roughshod over them and did everything that they wanted to. But Bo Nix is doing everything required of him to be able to put himself in contention and keep that team there. They're a well-rounded team. So I don't know. Like I'm still torn on them. I do definitely think that Washington has changed the perception in my mind just simply because they are winning these games. And so maybe that gives them the nod. But it'd be pretty phenomenal if Washington can go back to that championship game. They can go beat Oregon again. I mean that says a lot for this team. If they can do that again, I think, you know, that clearly puts them in that top four category. No duh. I mean, that's kind of a stupid statement. But I think you are among one of the best teams in the country. Obviously, Florida State's hurt now with Jordan Travis now out for the season with the gruesome injury. So it's funny you kind of get to this point in the season and everybody's worried, like, oh, what's going to happen if there's five undefeated teams or this and that? And that still may be the case. And you may have Alabama beat Georgia in the championship game. I still think a team like Washington has proven that they can be there. Even an Oregon team can show that they can be there. The Pac-12 is suited well, but I'm curious to see like how the committee ranks these teams, knowing that the Pac-12 has always kind of been crapped on in this situation.
It is sad and a little disheartening and honestly a little funny too, how things are shaking out here with the Pac-12 as the Pac-12, you know, starts to disappear here. Just look, if it's a Washington-Oregon Pac-12 championship game, that's probably a win and into the CFP.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
And the loser is still in good shape to get an at-large to a different New Year's Six Bowl. So you have that. And then you have not one, but potentially two Heisman finalists, not only from the Pac-12, but from like the I-5 corridor, like that one little corner of the Pac-12. Bo Nix could legitimately win the Heisman Trophy. There's so much positivity happening at the top of the Pac-12 after so many years of, as you said, the league getting crapped on in terms of national perception and college football playoff qualification, and all of this positivity is happening as the conference slowly fades away. It's like, yeah, it's like a little disheartening, you know, to see what's happened to the Pac-12, and you know, all of this positivity is coming at a point where, yeah, like we're like writing the epilogue, essentially. So it's a shame, and Saturday is going to be the last opportunity for, you know, Pac-12 regular season football, and there's an after dark game right between UCLA and Cal,
which is phenomenal on this weekend. Like it's the stupidest so good thing.
It's the dumbest thing. The dumbest thing is Notre Dame Stanford, yes, on the Pac-12 network. That is dumb.
The pettiness of it is kind of funny though.
I look, part of me hopes that the Cal UCLA game goes like 9 overtimes, so we like don't have to like let go of Pac-12 after dark. I don't want to let go, Josh.
No, I want it. I'm sad to see that. I just think it's funny. Like you have games split between Friday and Saturday, and somehow you still have to squeeze in an 8:30 p.m. kick.
Like, come on, dude.
A Pac-12 game.
What are we doing?
And it's on the Pac-12, right? Like, this isn't like, I don't know, just whatever.
8:30 kickoff in like 70% of the country can't see it, which is just, that's like another, it's so perfect how stupid that is.
So good.
Perfect.
Well, I don't want to get on this too long. Obviously, you're listening to this for Utah stuff, but I do want to point to the UCLA-USC because, wow.
Yeah.
USC, I mean, you come in talking about, like, you want to win championships and you're going to win all these things. You have the reigning Heisman winner. I mean, there's a real possibility there that they were on a 7-game losing streak. Like, honestly, like, that's how bad it got. Like, it baffles me that this is a situation where USC was at. They don't have anything. They're trying to find a new defensive coordinator and, you know, rumble. But
continue.
I just love Lincoln Riley's comments yesterday. Like, we're USC. We can get just about anybody we want. And just about anybody. But
look, we're not going to spend too long on this. But like part of what Lincoln Riley said yesterday, he essentially went with, you know, the old like Howard Stern mantra where it's like any publicity is good publicity.
Yeah, something like that.
And Lincoln Riley essentially said that it's like, yeah, any publicity is good publicity, and now we just have to switch the narrative. What are you talking about?
USC,
I'm being serious. Like,
no,
like
real,
how
so.
Do you think that makes sense in your mind? You began the season ranked number 6 in the AP poll. You had the reigning Heisman Trophy winner, skill position guys all over the place. You finish your regular season 7-5. But hey, we just have to flip the narrative now. All right.
It's asinine to me that this is even the situation that USC is trying to contort, right? Like, you come in here, you're paying Lincoln Riley reportedly $10 million a year. You've got, like, every recruit that you can ever imagine coming into those doors, and you're no better than when Clay Helton was there. Like, your recruiting's better, but, like, at least Clay Helton was, like, somebody that people liked internally. Like, I don't know. Like, there's just, like, there's a crazy amount of stuff here where USC has become this program where they just think that because they're USC and they have this pedigree of winning in the past, that that's suddenly who they are today. But they haven't been relevant in the national landscape for a decade. Am I wrong? Like, I just, to me, this is funny to me because it's just like, you try so hard to remain relevant. And the fact that he's sitting here saying these things where it's like, you know, we just have to change the narrative. Like, the narrative is terrible. And the reason for that is you and your coaching staff. Like, look, I don't like to dog too much on people for their professions and everything. Like, at the end of the day, like, this is a business. I get it. And they make a lot of money for it. But, like, there's just some, like, asinine takes here. The fact that, like, he can't own up to just, like, the level of play that they've had. Like, you lost your team. This is not a good year for you. Like, stop trying to pin it back on everybody else and saying, like, you weren't trying to win championships and all this other stuff, and you didn't know where that narrative came from when you built it yourself. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just funny to me, and it's like, if you don't give him all the talent, like, I don't know what you do, and clearly it's not going to get any better in the Big Ten. Like, nowhere in their roster are they instantly better next year because Caleb Williams is out the door. Like, are they going to be somehow this championship contending team next year in the Big Ten? But I digress. That's maybe a little too much of a rant, mini rant for that.
Yeah, no, I mean, the only point I'll make, you know, and you already alluded to this, like, it's an interesting offseason coming because you have to figure out what you're going to do at quarterback, right? You know, presumably Caleb Williams is going to the NFL. Do you put like Malachi Nelson in there, right? You know, the highly touted highly touted freshman QB who will be a redshirt freshman next year. Do you put him in there? Or look, you're USC with the NIL, you know, churning. Do you go to the portal and get somebody who's immediately eligible? So, I don't know how we got on this topic this deeply, but there's a lot of questions to answer at USC, especially going into a conference where, again, as you alluded to, things are not going to get any easier. They're going to get exponentially harder going against that level of competition.
Yeah. So let's leave it at that. We're done with the Pac-12. What a week. We got one more to go. Obviously, Utah plays Colorado this week. It's going to be senior day game again, 1 p.m. I know people aren't too happy about that, but and it's on the Pac-12. So
don't care.
Whatever. We're not really going to honestly talk about Arizona or Colorado this week because let's be real.
There's something else to talk about here. We're going to get into that.
So we're going to talk about Devon Vaylor. No, I'm just kidding. Cam Rising on Sunday, out of the blue. I mean, it was kind of rumbling that he was potentially coming back. And you and I have alluded to the fact that these have happened. We've heard things and kind of we've leading down the path. But Cam Rising announces on Sunday in a, what was it, like 27-30 second video?
27 second video, yep.
That he wanted to go one more year. So he's coming back. That's great for Utah. Obviously, they've got their starting quarterback back. They've got the guy that they've wanted. You're going into the Big 12. I mean, this seems like it sets up well, but I beyond that, and we can get into that, what is your initial take on Cam Rising coming back? Was it expected? Was it something that is good for the program? I know there's a lot of takes based on this, so I'm giving you an open floor.
Yeah, I think on the surface, I think this is exponentially positive news for Utah. You know, this is the face of your program, somebody who has won at a championship level at the most important position on the field. Rising will return this. It'll be his seventh year of college football, his sixth year at Utah. And not only is it his sixth year at Utah, it will be presumably his sixth year working under Andy Ludwig, the offensive coordinator.
That's longer than Britton Covey, even when Britton Covey, you consider his mission. I'm just saying.
It's nuts. The fact that it's Rising and Ludwig, look, that working relationship has been well documented, right? There's a lot of mutual respect between Ludwig and Rising. Ludwig, as we know, is like, you know, an ardent, lifelong football guy. And Ludwig kind of sees some of that in Rising. He's just very cerebral and understands football, and more specifically understands this offense and what Ludwig's scheme is and what Ludwig wants. So, you know, Rising coming back is a positive, right? You don't have to go through spring practice, you know, wondering about, you know, who might be your starter on August 29th against Southern Utah when the season opens. That situation is closed. Now, we assume that Rising is going to be healthy for spring practice. We shouldn't assume anything based on how this season went. I asked Kyle Whittingham about that, you know, on Monday. Do you expect Rising to be ready for the spring? Kyle Whittingham kind of went back to, you know, an oldie but a goodie, talking about how he's a quote outsider, you know, of, you know, within that decision. Don't make
Uno
me laugh.
Doctor. It's, Uno it, doctor.
Uno doctor. Hashtag Uno doctor. Yep. Look, we're going to talk about all of it, but on the surface, very generally speaking, this is a positive for Utah, given the experience and the transition to the Big 12, and now what you don't have to do in terms of figuring out who QB1 is. This is the, you know, of all the offseason things that needed to get done, Rising back in the fold is the biggest puzzle piece. And not only is that puzzle piece now in place, it is done early before the transfer portal opens on December 4th. Now the rest of your offseason can begin to take shape around Rising, whether it be, you know, recruiting or portal diving or retaining certain guys from this current roster. Maybe guys would be more inclined to return with Rising back. So this is an overwhelming positive thing for Utah with Rising opting to return.
And it needs to be made known that he hasn't officially been cleared in terms of a medical red shirt. So in theory, something could happen that could derail that. I don't, you know, Kyle Whittingham seems pretty optimistic about that. Seemed almost with 100% certainty that that was going to happen. So, you know, I wouldn't worry too much about that, but there's always that lingering, we'll give it a 99% doubt just in case. Not 99% doubt, but
it's expected to be a layup. But again, you have to go through the process. So after the bowl game, you can't do it before the bowl game. After the bowl game, they will go through the process with the NCAA and request the medical red shirt and whatever goes along with that. And, you know, by the letter of the law, you don't want to say 100% certainty, but like, based on the evidence and the fact that Rising didn't play a snap this year, they should be in good shape for a medical redshirt. But again, you have to go through the process.
And part of this is, you know, Rising was a hot commodity. A lot of programs wanted him, throwing top dollar NIL at him and trying to get him to come. He ultimately stays here. My understanding is Utah didn't offer him top dollar in terms of what other programs were trying to give him. I don't think they needed to, quite honestly. But I did find out through some sources that, you know, the NIL money that the Crimson Collective, for example, they wanted to get $5 to $6 million by the beginning of December. None of that money included what Cam Rising was there. So, like, all of that money is set aside for other athletes outside of Cam Rising. So that's a really interesting factor that, to me, previously I had assumed that that money was set aside in large part to help Cam. I mean, obviously it's for other people, right? But I think with Cam being your number one priority, like you mentioned, I expected a lot of that to be kind of allocated to him, not clearly the full $5 million, probably not even like $2 million. But to me, the fact that that money is reserved for other players that are available or trying to retain, that's a good thing for Utah, right? Like you're in a good spot. You've got Cam Rising locked up through NIL and all this other stuff. Now you've got that through some other stuff. You look like you have something to say.
No, I was just going to say, Utah was never going to be in a position to offer Rising top dollar. That's just not what the NIL machine here is built to do, right? It's not Oregon. It's not USC. It's not any number of Power Five programs and those NIL machines. So we knew going into this thing that there were going to be suitors that could offer more money to Rising. To that, we should say Rising's inner circle. And when I say inner circle, mom, dad, representation, people around the family, it's a very savvy group of people. They're no dummies, right? Like there is a, how do I put this? There is something to be said for the optics of staying loyal and, you know, being at Utah and only Utah. There is a long-term vision of what that could become later. If there is a coaching career to be had from Rising, you're going to want to be able to tell recruits, this is what loyalty is all about.
Yeah.
I stayed loyal, et cetera. There is a, I don't know if I'm saying this right, but like for the Risings and like the inner circle there, there is a long-term vision here of what not jumping at the money means. And I think that they played this well. And as like time had gone on here, it was becoming very apparent, at least to me, it was becoming very apparent that Rising was not going anywhere.
Yeah, for sure.
No matter the type of money somebody was going to throw at him. The only, again, as time went on, the only two like realistic options to me were return to Utah or end your college career. I didn't think that Rising was going anywhere else. That just wasn't an option as time had gone on. So, you know, and Kyle Whittingham yesterday did a good job of, you know, not mentioning NIL as a factor.
No.
And talking about, you know, he loves Utah, which look, Rising does love Utah.
He wouldn't have done this the way that he did if he didn't love Utah. I'll just say that.
Right. You know, I just thought it was funny how, you know, Kyle with the cameras on, like trying to be PC, did not even tiptoe up to money or NIL stuff. But let's be real here. NIL played a significant factor in bringing a 24-year-old student athlete who will be 25 by the time next season starts. NIL played a significant role in getting this done. And I think I said this on the last podcast or two podcasts ago, this Rising thing is the first like litmus test for the Crimson Collective to get something done on a high level, retaining this guy. The Crimson Collective did its job. This is why you have NIL. This is why certain people are involved in the machine. You got it done. You know, so kudos to the people who got it done, because it was critical that you got this done, because if Rising were to have left, you would have been in a position where you would have to dive back into the portal to go figure it out and go pay somebody else. Hindsight's always 20/20. Now that this is done, you had to get Rising back. If you want to compete for the Big 12 in 2024, you had to go get Rising back, and they did.
Well, and the thing is like Cam Rising is one of the most recognizable faces in all of the state, right? Like you've got Utah Jazz players, you've got Kyle Whittingham, Kalani Sitake, like those types of names, but Cam Rising is in that level. Everybody knows who Cam is. And if you can't pay
him, and the hair and the facial hair and how he carries, he is, I don't know if he's more recognizable than like Kyle or Kalani, but like he's right there. In my opinion.
Yeah, and you had to get that, right? So I think what you said, too, about the loyalty, like at the end of the day, Cam, I mean this in the nicest way, Cam doesn't care about Utah in that respect, right? Like, obviously, he wants to be loyal to the program for his own, you know, I don't want to say selfish, but his own needs. But it also ties into what Utah's able to do. They've had many players that people have tried to poach, namely top-end players like a Dalton Kincaid, you know, Brant Keithy, these other players, and they've stayed committed to Utah. As a program, that means something, right? Like that allows you to be able to build on something when you go into recruiting. Kyle can say, hey, look, not only are we going to give you this opportunity at the NFL or, you know, conference championships, we're going to give you a place where you can feel loyal because we've built a culture that works. A lot of programs want to talk about culture, right? And I hate it in a lot of ways because it's a buzzword that gets thrown around in sports, especially when a new coach is hired. We're going to build a culture here and we're going to do this. There's very few programs that have legitimately built a program around the culture that like a Utah has, right? Utah's not the only one. I don't want to use that as like the example, but the fact that Kyle's been able to keep the stability there with his coaching staff for the most part, with his players, like that says a lot, right? So if you're bought into the Utah system and Utah's bought into you, you've got it made. Now it's just a matter of getting it done. And I think that was, like you said, the number one job that needed to happen. If they could get that done, so much stuff is going to fall into play. And we're going to see a ripple effect on that, right? And we can talk about some of that ripple effect. But first, I'm curious kind of your thoughts on what that QB room looks like. Kyle talked about it a little bit. And he was actually much more forthcoming about it than I expected him to be. I expected a little bit more of a PC answer. But I don't know. What does the quarterback room look like to you, and kind of what did Kyle say?
Yeah, you know, just to further, you know, your point there, Kyle Whittingham, he actually, it was Dana Green started asking a question about the quarterback room behind Rising and what things might look like in 24. Kyle cut Dana Green off towards the end, not to be impolite, but he, you know, he saw where it was going. And Kyle was very forthcoming about the room is probably going to look different. There's going to be some natural attrition, kind of like there always is every year. He called quarterback the most volatile position on the roster, which is true. You can only play one quarterback at a time, generally. And I've made this point. The fact that Rising is returning in 24, he is, of course, the unquestioned starter, assuming health. That means that, okay, if Rising is starting, that means nobody else is starting. And if nobody else is starting, how much patience is there in the room? Brandon Rose will be, assuming he gets his medical red shirt, he will be a third-year freshman next year, having never taken a collegiate snap. Bryson Barnes has 2 years of eligibility left. Does he want to spend that time grinding it out behind Rising? Does he want to call it a career? Does he want to go to an FCS or a group of five where he could certainly at least be in the mix? I think Nate Johnson is a huge X factor here. I will leave this season thinking that he didn't really get a fair shake. The month of September was a mess. And after he had taken over the job, it's not like he was getting a full complement of number one reps every week. He was splitting it with Rising. I don't think the, you know, the staff has handled Nate Johnson very well. That's a topic for another day. Mac Howard, no idea, kind of a non-entity at this moment. Isaac Wilson is coming in off knee surgery and probably is not in a position to compete for the job anyway. We can guess all we want about who might transfer, who should transfer, what the room is going to look like. I don't think that's fair of us to sit here and like pontificate over Rose or Johnson or whoever leaving. I will say that with Rising returning, I think we're guaranteed that the room is going to look different. You can't keep everybody happy. I would say that somebody, maybe multiple somebodies, are probably leaving. Just with Rising, you know, for 24, I had a mailbag question, which was absolutely insane, asking me, will Isaac Wilson transfer before he gets a crack at the job? I had to, like, stand up from my desk and, like, take a breath before I, like, answer that question. Completely insane. Yeah, I mean, this is always the trickle-down effect, right? And, you know, and Kyle is right. This is the most volatile position in football because you can only play one at a time. So I'll be curious to see, you know, what happens here. And look, I don't know what's going to happen here, but I'm pretty confident that somebody, at least one person, is leaving. That's just the nature of the position, and Rising returning like dictates, if not demands, that there be some trickle down effect and that the room changes.
I've come around to a point where this is only for the quarterback position. And I say this, as long as a team like Utah is willing to pay for it, they shouldn't care who's in that room. Now, within reason, right? Like, obviously you have to have guys in that room that are going to, you saw that if Cam Rising isn't playing, you need some quality people. But what I mean by that,
some level of depth.
Yes. What I mean by that, yep, though, is you can't worry about who's going to leave your room within reason, right? Like, I know we talked about it a little bit, and I know a lot of the fans have been really worried about Brandon Rose. One, we don't know anything about Brandon Rose, really. We saw him in spring. We saw what he can potentially do. We've heard a lot of good things about him. But at the end of the day, if you've got a proven winner like Cam Rising coming back, you do everything you can to bring him back. Once Cam leaves, you figure it out the next time, right? You know that this is your last year you're going to get Cam Rising. Now your future is completely open. But the reality is you're going to go to the transfer portal. Like, you're not going to go to the transfer portal. So if you're willing to pay for a high-end quarterback and Utah wants to compete at that level, it doesn't really matter, in my opinion, right? Cam Rising came in as a transfer, and his is a little bit different because he had to go before the rules, and he had to sit out
a
year.
That was very early in the transfer portal era, like exceptionally early before there were guardrails and the whole thing.
Exactly. But the point that I'm making is you see a lot of these programs, there's very few of them are building homegrown talent, and homegrown meaning through the recruiting process, that's what I meant to say, where they're taking them from the time that they come in as a freshman and then develop them into a starting quarterback. There are guys out there, obviously, at top-end programs that are doing that, but I think the norm is if that guy, you always have to have somebody in that room that you can have faith in, but you have to always be open to the transfer portal. You've got to be able to have a guy ready, and you got to know that that's where it's going to be at. So if you lose guys through attrition or through the transfer portal, that's just life, right? Kyle mentioned on Monday that he feels like he's very capable of adapting, and I have to tend to agree with him. I think it's frustrating to him at times that things happen. But that's where you have to be. At that position, more than any position in college football, you have to be 100% adaptable and just go with the punches, right? If Cam leaves, you've got to find, well, we know Cam's going to leave. You've got to find somebody that you can bring into the program that's at least a veteran to at least challenge your youth and be able to test it. So, you know, we can get worried about, is Brandon coming back? Is Nate coming back? I just don't know that it matters, because you're still going to try to find somebody in the transfer portal. And maybe that's a wrong take, and maybe that's not the way that needs to be. I just don't think that the quarterback position is one where you have to fully worry about that depth to the point where you're nervously worrying that, like, oh no, is he going to transfer? Like, that's just the nature of it. Like you said, one player is going to play outside of an injury. That's where it is, and that's just kind of how this sport is kind of developing.
Yeah, no, you're probably right. I think people are, and look, fans are going to be fans, and I don't fault anybody. You know, there's been a pretty consistent drumbeat about what Brandon Rose is or could be. So yeah, people are, you know, wanting him to stick around, but you're right. You know, you need to be able to adapt. But, you know, the thing with, and look, sorry, let me back up. Let me start here. Kyle Whittingham has showed in the past that he is not afraid to dive into the portal looking for a quarterback. Mm-hmm. And I know that fans don't want to hear that, but we're going to go through this again, okay? They went and got Jake Bentley. That did not work out. But in fairness, Bentley did not win the job out of camp in 2020. Rising won the job in 2020.
Exactly.
Bentley was only playing because Rising got hurt. They didn't want to be playing Jake Bentley. Like, that did not work out. And, like, depending on who you ask, like, Rising steamrolled him during, you know, COVID fall camp in 2020.
But you need him in that room, though. That's the why. You needed a 100%. Veteran player. That's why you brought him in.
You needed a veteran guy at that time, because Tyler Huntley left after 2019. And, you know, what was in the room? Drew Lisk was in the room. You had Rising, but at the time, Rising was unproven. You didn't know exactly what you had. So you needed to go out and get Jake Bentley. No argument. The Charlie Brewer thing at the time on paper, that was a colossal, gigantic get for the University of Utah coming out of 2020. You were able to get a guy who had thrown for 9,700 yards at the Power 5 level. Didn't work out, was a bit of a train wreck, but like you had at the time, you had to go out and get a quarterback, because remember, coming out of 2020, Bentley wasn't it, and he was going to leave anyway. Drew Lisk said that, you know, he was done playing football. He wasn't the guy anyway. And Rising was going through major offseason reconstructive shoulder surgery. You had to go get somebody. So you got Charlie Brewer. You got your Quindon Jackson, who at the time was a, you know, pretty highly touted four-star kid from Duncanville in Texas, who had spent his freshman year at the University of Texas. So you had to do these things. So the point I'm making is Kyle Whittingham is unafraid to go into the transfer portal for a quarterback if he deems it necessary. Now, going into the portal now for a quarterback is different than it was 3-4 years ago when you're talking about Bentley and Brewer and Jaquindon Jackson, because now you're going to have to pay to get a top flight quarterback. Sure. The question would become, does Utah have the resources and enough of a machine NIL-wise to get in the mix for a veteran, accomplished Power 5 level quarterback? That would be an interesting scenario, because again, this is not 3 or 4 years ago where you can just go recruit your ass off. Like, it doesn't work like that anymore. That's part of it, but the money is another part of it. So we don't know if that's going to happen. We can't look. I can't look into the future and tell you what the room will or needs to look like in 25. We don't even know what the room's going to look like in 24, quite frankly. But these are all things to be thinking about. Like, they're unafraid to go into the portal for a quarterback, but if you do that, you're going to have to be prepared to pay for it, because Utah's not the only team that may need a quarterback from the portal down the road.
And don't rule it out that Utah's going to look for a quarterback this year in the transfer portal. Like, do not. Like, just because you have Cam coming back doesn't mean that they're not going to go transfer portal looking, right? Like, they're going to go in there.
It's a bit of a tough sell.
It is.
For, you know.
But you, like, you've got to be able to – I mean, I don't want to use this, but, like, you use it in the way that Cam Rising has been hurt 3 years, right? Like, he every year he's gotten injured. Something's happened to him.
A lot of injuries. Yeah.
It's not – you know, he's not unusual in that regard. A lot of quarterbacks are that way. And so you've got to be able to you can use that as a recruiting chip in the sense that, look, you know, quarterbacks are glass in a lot of ways. If they get hurt, you're the next man up. And so I don't want to say that there's going to be some top flight guy that you're going to get to be able to say in the transfer portal and say, hey, come in. But if you can find somebody that you really, really like that is willing to sit maybe even a year as a backup, there's a lot of potential there where you're sitting behind Cam Rising. You get the opportunity to sit in that system, especially if Utah doesn't have the faith that it needs to in its room, right? They always have to be recruited. When I said that you shouldn't worry about that, I don't mean fully. Like, you still have to develop those recruits, right? You're developing them along to a point where you feel confident to say, look, we believe that when Cam Rising or moving on future on down the line, we believe that we have enough here that if we even bring in a transfer, they're at least still contending with them, and we believe that they can be there. That's where this is going to be too, right? Like, Utah's not bringing somebody in to replace Cam Rising. That's asinine. That's not happening. But you're bringing in somebody that potentially can be a veteran player or at least has some sort of Power 5 experience that they believe in, that they can come in and say, look, if Cam gets hurt because we have to have insurance, you're our guy. And you could potentially be our guy moving forward because now you have a whole year, you've gotten this experience, and you're set. So I don't know that that's going to be fully happening. Utah would be stupid not to look at the transfer portal for a quarterback. It's just the logistics of it, and like, how do you convince a guy to sit behind a guaranteed starter when that's the case? So I don't know. I don't know that we need to keep beating this down. We can move on from this, but I think that's kind of where it's at. Don't be surprised if you start hearing names about that and Utah going into the transfer portal for a quarterback. That doesn't mean they don't have faith in Cam Rising. He's still the unquestioned leader. This is just the nature of sports. You've always got to find a new guy. Unless you want to look like the Jets and have nobody to have as your quarterback, you're going to be...
That is mean-spirited, sir. Why? What? Why are you doing this?
I just threw that in so well. Oh, that was good.
Oh, my God.
I almost didn't even get it out. I was trying not to laugh. So, anyways. I'm sorry.
That's amazing.
That was rude. Penance.
Let me ask you this. We just ad nauseum went through the quarterback room. What level of trickle down effect do you believe there might be in terms of other guys, right? Brian Keithy has a decision to make, and Mekhi Bernard and Devon Vale, maybe Jaquindon Jackson, maybe Micah Pittman. What level of trickle down, good or bad, do you envision there being now with Rising back in the fold?
Yeah, I think this is huge. And you saw it in the past years where everybody was waiting to see what Cam Rising did. And if Cam Rising came back, they felt a lot of faith, especially guys on the offensive side of the ball. It still trickles down to the defensive side of the ball because you look at, like, this year's defense, for example, they want to be paired up with an offense that is going to win, right? And so that works. And so they believe that Cam Rising is the guy that can lead them to where they need to be. That doesn't mean that Utah is going to be in a Big 12 championship or compete for a college football playoffs. That is their goals. But I think you're seeing what that does. Like, we talked to some players yesterday, or a player yesterday, we won't get into that, really, like, kind of just was excited about the fact of the future of Cam Rising, right, and what it is. And, you know, players can kind of let things slip every once in a while. It sounds like Mekhi Bernard is going to be coming back. It sounds like Micah Pittman's coming back. It sounds like a lot of these guys are coming back that will, you know, be involved in the game next year. These veteran players, I don't think there was a lot of surprise with some of them. The biggest one is Brant Keithy. And Brant Keithy has been the biggest lock and key, do not talk about it, nobody knows situation. Yeah. I honestly think this comes down to Brant Keithy and maybe like two other people in his life. Maybe it's a little bit bigger than that, I don't know. But it is a very tight circle right now. Quite honestly, we haven't seen Brant Keithy around the program as much. That doesn't mean that he's not invested in the program or that he is not considering a return. He obviously put on Instagram the video of Cam Rising coming back, and I think there's an indication that he is planning to come back. But this is a tough decision. Him more than anybody else, I think this is the toughest decision just because of how old he's getting. He had arguably the best NFL prospects of a bunch of those guys. And so he's got to figure out where he's at. But he's also been out of the league essentially almost 2 years because he got injured real early in the 2022 season. So
yeah,
I don't know. Like there, let's just say there's a huge trickle-down effect. You're going to see a lot of guys announcing that they're coming back. They may still walk this Saturday against Colorado. But it's going to be a good thing for Utah where potentially you're bringing back, what, 15, 20, almost your entire starting lineup on both sides of the ball. Like, a lot. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, Keithy has Keithy has flirted with the NFL twice during his career. Okay, he almost left. I don't want to say almost left, but he was like really considering it after 2020. When he was draft eligible for the first time, right? Of course, he had, you know, that monster breakout 2019 season with Tyler Huntley, right? When Utah went to the Pac-12 title game, you know, he flirted with it after 2020. He flirted a lot harder with it after 2021, opted to return, got hurt early in 22, and here we are. And as you said, by the time next season starts, he'll be off the field almost 2 years, but you're not getting any younger. And I looked this up last night when I was reading the when I was doing the mailbag. I forget exactly how old he is. I believe he turns 24 in December. So look, time is not on your side, but your injury history sort of dictates that it's probably not a good idea to take a shot at the NFL. Like you don't have any fresh film. You're probably, and again, I don't know. Like you're probably not getting a combine invite at this point. Like he would have gotten a combine invite had he left. After 21.
He did get a combine invite.
Did he?
Yeah,
he did get a combine invite. Yeah, him and Kincaid, you know, both had it. So, yeah, that's a tough one. And as you said, that one is pretty strong lock and key. I went a little deep into the Rolodex a few days ago trying to get any sort of context on that, but I got stonewalled. So, I mean, that's a big one. You know, and if Keithy comes back, you know, his relationship with Ludwig and his camaraderie. I sound like my 2 year old.
You've been hanging around your son too much.
The camaraderie between Rising and Keithy, the relationship they have on and off the field, Utah can be really, really good next year. I'm not going to say that if all these guys come back that like they're absolutely going to win the Big 12, but if all these guys come back, you certainly have to consider them among the favorites amongst, you know, whatever, Oklahoma State or Kansas State, potentially Kansas. So, you know, big things could be ahead for Utah, but for now, you know, the biggest domino has fallen. Like you have Rising back, things could be a lot, you know, a lot worse for Utah right now, but you have the most important piece of the puzzle back. And at a minimum, you're at least off to a very positive, optimistic start for what is obviously a critical, critical offseason.
And this isn't just about keeping guys, right? I mean, that is the big part, especially guys that have been consistent in the program. And obviously, you know, Kyle is going to be realistic with a lot of these guys that if they are contributing guys or guys in the starting lineup, he's going to want them back, right? Like, I don't think there's a scenario where Kyle's saying, nah, you should probably leave. The dirty little secret is coaches do push players out of the program, but I don't think you're getting a lot of those players being pushed out of the program, right? Kyle wants them. But on the flip side, that turns into a crazy roster management situation. And part of that, you can kind of see how Kyle has recruited this year. They've gone a much lower class because they have to keep their numbers down to keep the scholarships. They kind of understood that there's a scenario where some of these guys are going to come back. I don't think that they projected anything like this year happening, but I think that's kind of where they're at. But the reality is the way this has gone and the trickle-down effect is you did lose a recruit this week. You lost a running back that just the sheer numbers of it isn't going to help. Like, you've got somebody that really wanted to be here. He was committed, 100% committed. You can say whatever you want with that, 1,000% committed, all those stuff. The point is, like, there just wasn't room for him. You had three freshman running backs coming in last year. You've got potentially, you know, Mekhi Bernard, Jaquinnon Jackson. I don't know what Jalen Glover does, and I don't want to speculate on that. Jalen obviously has grown in his program here, but I wouldn't blame him if he wanted to leave. Chris Curry, he's a senior. Does he want to try to explore an opportunity to come back? That's a tough decision as well. it's just a crowded room, right? And so you're going to start seeing that. You're going to start seeing transfers just simply by attrition. You're seeing guys that are just saying, look, I'm never going to get time. And as frustrating as that is, where it's like, look, I knew that in 2 years I could see the field because XYZ, these players were going out. Now it's delayed a year or it's delayed 2 years. I understand why that's frustrating to people. And so this is kind of the hard part. This is where college football especially becomes a business now that the transfer portal is there, because guys want to go get paid, right? They want to try to get an opportunity to be able to, one, play the game that they love, and two, hopefully potentially get to the NFL. And they can't do that sitting behind a bunch of guys, right? You can argue maybe they're not destined to be that if they can't beat out guys, but Utah has significantly talented players at almost all of these positions. So it's just tough. Don't be surprised if you see guys that are transferring out. I wouldn't buy into that too much as like a negative thing about Utah. I think that's just the nature of where this is, especially when you're bringing back a majority, at least this is what we think, a majority of your two deep on both sides of the ball. So it'll be an interesting situation to see how this plays out, but it's going to have some ramifications. And I think that's mostly going to be felt in the quarterback room and running back room, where you're going to see more of that attrition take place.
Yeah. You know, these are things that maybe we don't talk about enough or sometimes at all. Like, like it's overwhelmingly positive news for Utah that Rising is coming back. But like with that, you have a new set of not problems, but like a new set of circumstances to deal with. You know,
I got 99 problems with Cam Rising 8-1. Is that right?
I was gonna do that, but then you did it and I'm embarrassed for you, so let's just move forward.
I mean, it worked. It's fine.
That was amazing.
Okay, I'll
try. It's fine. Yeah, look, these are problems that are gonna have to be figured out. And look, Kyle, you know, we've talked about in the past about transparency and like won't give it to you straight, but might lead you down the path. Like, he was pretty clear yesterday that, you know, about attrition in the quarterback room. And in terms of recruiting, like, you're keeping your scholarship numbers down because you know that on your big board you need to keep X amount of scholarships open in case there is some portaling to be done. More guys leave, more guys opt to stay. It's a big numbers game. I would love to get a look at, like, what does the big board look like in, you know, in Kyle's office or, you know, whoever's office, Adam Fry's office. Like, what does the big board look like? There's just so many moving parts and there's so much uncertainty. You know, the way recruiting works is you can get a non-binding verbal commitment from a kid, but it doesn't matter until they put pen to paper. Guys decommit at the last minute, guys commit at the last minute. It's fascinating how they keep all this straight and how they can field a competitive roster. Like, it's not easy. And it's only gotten harder now in this day and age, again, of the transfer portal.
It's going to be interesting, too, to see who walks this weekend, right? Like, you've got listed, this is listed, and this is including walk-on players, 13 listed seniors. Some of those guys are, you know.
This is not, just to be clear, this is not the senior day list. This is just who is eligibility-wise as a senior.
Fully listed as a senior on the roster.
Okay.
There's underclassmen that will declare and at least potentially walk as well. And, yep. And, you know, some of them may have already made up their mind they're coming back, but Kyle has told them, you know, I want you to walk. And so we'll see. Kyle had made mention that it's anywhere between 12, 15, 18 maybe players that will probably walk. I don't know that he fully knows that day, and I know based on some conversations it really does kind of come down to later in the week. I'm a little skeptical of that, but anyways, the point being, 13 listed seniors on scholarship or on the roster. 10 of those are on scholarship. Some of those guys have exhausted all of their availability, right? Like a Thomas Yasmin, Miles Battle, they can't come back. So don't expect them to kind of put their names back out there. There's other players that we talked about, like a Micah Pittman, or there's Brant Keithy or Cam Rising. Obviously, Cam's made his announcement. To Travis Broughton, does he come back? You know, there's a lot of guys here that there may be potential where they come back. There's just quite honestly not a ton of seniors that – I don't want to call them not a lot of impact players, because there are a lot of impact players in that list. But I think you're seeing a roster that is very well set up to be able to come back and have a lot of potential, that Utah's not really losing a lot even just through those seniors. So it's a good spot. I am curious still to see who walks, especially the underclassmen, as we kind of see what happens there. But I don't – I it's going to be kind of, in my opinion, kind of like a ho-hum type day. There's not really a lot of
– yeah.
There's not a lot of intrigue like last year that we were looking at.
No, and as always, look, it's Tuesday – I was told that they're trying to put the senior day list out tomorrow at some point, Thanksgiving Eve. As you said, that number is anywhere from like 12. The high end I've heard is like 18. What you have to remember is whatever the senior day list looks like, underclassmen, seniors, it just take it with a grain of salt, because some of that is, and Kyle has said this in years past, that some of the guys who walk on senior day are guys who are on the fence. And if you're on the fence, Kyle really pushes you to, okay, if you're just thinking about it, go through senior day and get honored just in case you do decide to leave. So, you know, guys like Miles Battle, guys like Thomas Yasmin, yes, those guys are done. Other guys with eligibility left, take it all with a grain of salt. It's really, I hate to say this, like, it's really just for show. This is not like the official, like, we're leaving. Like, if Brand Keithy walks on Saturday, of course everybody's going to lose their mind. That's what fans do. Just Cam take it all with a grain of salt. Can you imagine if Rising came out for senior day and what the message boards would look like immediately after?
It's funny.
I will leave.
I remember that was the joke I said in the press box. I said, how many times can Cam Rising take senior day? And that's when Jordy gave me the glare. So,
yeah. Fun fact, Rising come July is going to set the FBS record for most media days attended in two different conferences.
That's the best.
Media day in his second conference.
With the same team. That's incredible.
Oh my god. What a world.
This has been a wild year, and unfortunately it ends this Saturday in terms of the Pac-12, right? This is the last game for the Pac-12 era. Obviously there will be a bowl game, but that is not against a Pac-12 team, and so Colorado is it for Utah. So, I mean, this is kind of it, and it's you know, it is sad, right? Like, you see what this conference was, you see how good it was this year, and you obviously bemoan the fact of not getting Pac-12 After Dark anymore. I think all of that is valid, and unfortunately, it's the Pac-12's own doing. And so it's really unfortunate that this is where it's at. You know, soak it up, enjoy it, have some fun with it. I know it's probably not going to be the most entertaining game. I think the line for this game started at around 18, 18 and a half, and it's now up to 21 and a half from what I saw. I still think that's a massive number given this, but Colorado has been bad, and they, you know, they can't stop the run, and obviously Utah knows how to run the ball at least fairly effectively. So maybe that's
it. If you are like trying to decide whether to place a bet responsibly in a state that is not Utah, you know, not for nothing.
No.
Deion Sanders did say this morning during his normal weekly presser, he indicated that Shador Sanders, his son, right, the star quarterback, is day-to-day. He's banged up. Unclear if Shador Sanders will play, but Deion did indicate that Travis Hunter, who is also banged up, would probably go Saturday. Interesting side note. Deion said that Travis Hunter doesn't really practice until Wednesday. That's a thing, and that caught my attention as a thing. No,
I get it, like he's trying to help him recoup, but like that, I mean, like, of all the players, like, he's probably one that I'm not as worried about, but I also feel like that sets a bad precedence for right? Where I don't know, this look, this game, like, I know there was a lot of hype around Coach Prime and all this other stuff, and for good reason, right? Like, I really think that what Deion is building there can be good for the program. I think it can be a great opportunity for Colorado, especially if he decides to stay. But I think what he found out and what college football is finding out, that you just can't answer all your questions through the transfer portal, right? Like, I think you do have to have a lot of that talent that you bring in, that you coach up. There has to be a buy-in to that level, and it's tough, right? And Colorado was never in a situation where you thought it was going to be this overwhelming, you know, we're going to get to 11-1 season. I mean, there were some people out there that were kind of predicting something like that, especially when they started out hot, but I don't know. This is, they're in a world of hurt. They don't have a defense to stop anybody. They don't have an offense that can contain any pass rush, and so Shadir Sanders has been on the ground more than he'd like to be. So it'll be interesting. If he doesn't play, I don't know, man. Like, this is going to be like that game last year where it was just like 66 to whatever it was. Or I don't even remember the score because we were paying attention to another game.
63-21 last year. I don't think Utah's offense is going to drop 63. But to your point, this could end up being like a pretty, benign game. It's going to be interesting. Like, look, obviously Utah's not playing for a trip to Vegas. And I'm curious to see how many.
They might be playing for a trip to Vegas.
Touche. That sounds like your problem, not mine. Wink, wink.
I'm hoping that it's Vegas. Can I just say that?
You don't want to go to El Paso?
No. It's fine. I don't know.
I hope for your sake it's not. But just my last thought here. I'll be curious to see what the atmosphere looks like for a 1 o'clock game in which two teams are not really playing for much. Obviously, Utah is going bowling. They're not playing for a trip to the Pac-12 championship game. 19,000 people in the seats at kickoff.
Sellout, baby.
Is that sellout streak will live on though? Tickets distributed is a sellout. I promise you the game is officially sold out. But in terms of people in the seats, 19, 20, 21,000. That's what I'm guessing.
I think you could bring a couple people. Your in-laws are in town, right?
My in-laws are in town, and my father-in-law has been talking about like wanting to go to a Utah football game.
I'm just saying.
But then he starts complaining about how cold it is. So I'm like, there's no dome over Rice Eccles.
You don't want to take your son? I mean, it could be fun, right?
I don't know that he's old enough to
appreciate
sit through 3 hours. I think once it gets warm out, I think we're gonna delve into the world of minor league baseball.
Ooh,
which
that's
is
good.
Which is like cost effective. And if he makes it through the third inning, it's like, okay. When your kids were very young, did you try to like not force sports upon them, but did you try to like lead them down that path?
Not really. I mean, like, I think just naturally me watching sports all the time led them to that. I mean, that's their life. Like my middle son, especially, like he loves being active and loves playing sports. My oldest one, he's like a savant with remembering who's on what team. And like, there's guys that I can't even remember. And he's like, oh yeah, they played in this team in 1977. I'm like, who the hell are you? No. So, I mean, like I never pushed that, I haven't even pushed my teams on my kids. I want them to kind of choose. The funny thing is their first college football game that they ever went to was that Utah Oregon game. So I've never taken them to anything. They go to That's jazz games look. Because they get like junior jazz tickets. So
they do
that stuff. But yeah, I don't push it on them by any means.
Yeah, no, I've talked myself into like I'm not gonna push it on them. But like as you said, like I do this for a living, and I have sports. We try not to give him a ton of screen time, but I'll have a game on every now and again. So he's gonna grow up seeing what I do for a living and seeing what my interests are. I'm going to try really hard not to put my teams on him because he doesn't deserve that.
No, he doesn't.
He deserves to make up his own mind.
I will say, like, as an adult, watching your kids kind of embrace sports, that's really fun, right? Like, not even just playing it. That is in its own level. But watching them, like, get passionate about teams and kind of seeing that passion grow through it's fun. So, like, it's funny. Like, I'm a Cowboys fan. My youngest son, he decided he wanted to be an Eagles fan. And
which I think is tremendous.
It is tremendous. I the reality is I don't care about a sports team that much. Working in media has kind of killed any fandom I've ever had.
Sure.
So it's just kind of like, I don't know. It's just kind of fun to watch him do it and just kind of see it. Like, he's an Eagles fan. My the rest of my family's a huge Chiefs fan. So last night was kind of a fun game with them. But it was
interesting.
Fun.
Interesting.
Yeah, but it's just fun to be able to see, and I love it. Sports is a great equalizer in a lot of things where you can just kind of all come together and enjoy time. So I don't know. It's fun.
Yeah.
With that said, let's go. Let's end this podcast and gear up for the Turkey Day where we get to gain 10 pounds and just watch football. My team will probably suck that day just because that's just how things go. And I can complain about that. But you know what? I get free food. So here we are.
I get free food. I think we're done now.
I think we're done. All right. With that, we're just going to sign off. It's we're delusional at this point, and clearly nothing's happening. Nothing's happening in this world. So anyways, we'll catch you guys later after Saturday's game. We won't know yet bowl games or anything that way, but we may have a better idea of kind of where things are going. So With that, signing off. Have a great day.
Later, guys.